Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action. Hey friends, it's Diane. Someone Gets Me, the Visionary Playground, and I have a great guest for you today. I met Melanie Klein at this great event in San Diego. And when she was on the stage, I was, oh my God, I just had to know her. So then later on in this event, we got to pick anybody we wanted to interview live. So I picked her and I was really happy I did. I still am. And then at the end of the interview, I said, Melanie, you have to be on the show. And here's why. Everything she said from that stage and every PowerPoint she showed aligns with our vision perfectly. It's like she's one of us and she didn't even know it yet. So she's so kind and generous to have take time out of her day to do this great interview with us. So sit back, get your tea, and enjoy the interview. Welcome to the show, Melanie.
Thank you so much for having me and for that beautiful introduction, Diane. I am so happy to be here. And I'm happy to find out that I am part of your circle. And now that I know, I couldn't be more grateful.
It's so fun to run into someone who's like, it's just a perfect match right away. So I want to start off this conversation with you asking a little bit about how did you come into working in empowerment with people? Because empowerment is such a great topic. And sometimes people use it in a way that I think isn't really all that authentic, but you do it authentically. So how did you get here? Tell us a little bit about Melanie's story.
Great. Thanks for asking that question. I think telling stories, these personal stories of how we got there. I find it is the most engaging and kind of heart-centered way to share what we're about and to also, you know, diffuse the teachings. And for me, it was stepping into a really incredible class at a community college called Sociology of Women. And I had sort of dabbled with these ideas of empowerment, what it meant, but I didn't really have the language. I didn't really have the awareness or the understanding of truly what it was or why it was even important for me. It was very vague, yet there was an outline, you could say, that was forming for me. And then when I went into this class, it was like my mentor helped me kind of color in that picture. Because what I came to understand is that a lot of the ways in which I had felt very small and the ways that I had diminished myself or felt diminished, some of the, I would say, more toxic and dysfunctional aspects of my upbringing and my experiences up until that point were very clearly rooted in a larger system of oppression as a woman. And so there was this incredible liberatory moment for me of understanding that I was not the problem per se, that there wasn't something lacking in me, there wasn't even something that necessarily had to be fixed, but rather what was the problem was growing up in a culture in which girls and women are, you know, systematically oppressed. They end up internalizing that oppression and really kind of creating blockades in their own way. The doubt, you know, the sort of lack of self-worth that I was feeling was part of a sort of pattern among girls and women. And also the fact that girls and women are objectified, they're dehumanized, all of those things, like understanding that this was not something that was just happening to me. This wasn't just something that I was feeling or had experienced, but this was part of a patterning, you know, systematic oppression was that moment of opening, like, oh, great, okay. So it's something larger than myself, which means that I am actually fine the way I am and that there are some new possibilities available for me. And that was really, I think, my first tangible, official step toward authentic empowerment. And I felt very, very supported by my mentor. I was also incredibly supported and propelled forward by what I was learning and studying. And there was that, you know, kind of click moment, if you want to call it, that light bulb moment where I knew that this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, that I wanted to be committed to this process and this path of empowerment for other girls and women and for other people in general, knowing that this would allow all of us to benefit as a society when we give everyone an opportunity to be completely self-actualized, and when we see everyone as having equal value within their diversity.
Right. And everybody is set free when any group is set free, you know, so there's such a larger ripple effect. And you brought up a point that I tell people a lot, is that what if what the culture and everybody says is a liability or a problem really is an asset? And what if the way we're trained to see things generationally even is passing down misinformation, lies, false belief systems, and all of those kinds of things? So what are some things that you've done to help yourself kind of break away all that gookie stuff that has been shoved on all of us? I mean, because it's not just women, it's everybody. Because if women are experiencing it, so are men, even if it's differently. So what has Melanie done in your own life to free you? Because the talk I heard from you and your presence and energy clearly states that you have, in some ways, in a lot of ways, freed yourself. So how have you done that?
Yeah, I love that question, because it's about then what actions have you taken? What has actually allowed you to manifest that? And I think that's important, because a lot of times people can get caught up in the analysis, or they can get caught up in the intellectualizing and fail to really then act on or to be. And that's sort of the sacred equation, is doing both. And for me, it started with sort of what you already outlined. You said, what is if we, you know, we face the lies? What is if we ask different questions? And so for me, that was going into critical consciousness, right? Not just critical thinking, but critical consciousness, starting to ask new questions, starting to deconstruct, starting to look at patterns within myself and the larger culture, and really positing these different scenarios. What could it look like? What would it be like? Why is it this way? To whose benefit? To whose detriment? What happens if we reimagine it? And so that's where it started, was with that critical consciousness, to come into my sense of self, with more mindfulness, with more, you know, sort of a critical analysis, and then adding on to that my embodiment practices. So not keeping it a heady thing, but also beginning to look at, okay, great. So if I shift these thoughts, if I change these particular ways of seeing and interpreting and believing, and I start to dismantle and deconstruct and reimagine, what does that feel like? What does that, how does that land in my body? And so a couple years after I had first walked into that sociology course, which got me thinking about patriarchy and systems of oppression, I walked into my first yoga class. That was 1996. And so this is where, when I say the sacred equation for me, it was kind of having the intersection of new ways of thinking, new ways of being, right? New ways of seeing, new ways of showing up, and taking that fully into who I was, as opposed to keeping it some kind of a, you know, intellectual or academic exercise. Instead of it just being research, it became, okay, great. Well, if I've been taught as a woman to doubt myself, if I've been taught as a woman to dismiss my intuition, if I've been taught as a woman to only see myself as an object and to only appreciate myself if I approximate the normative beauty ideal, well, what does it then look like, and what does it feel like to practice acceptance? What does it feel like and look like to live from a place of love, from a place of truth? Do I even know how to access my truth? What does it sound like? How does that information show up? And so coming into an embodied movement practice allowed me to reacquaint myself with the fullness of who I was, not just as an object and not just as a brain, but as a fully dimensional human, and accessing all the different sort of portals of wisdom and insight, and beginning to model for myself what generosity, moderation, forgiveness could look like in my relationship with myself.
Right. You know, it's like, we're not just sticks with heads on it.
I know? Always talk about that. Yes, exactly.
We're not. And especially if you're a woman and you have intelligence like we do, it's so easy to really fall into it, or people just to see us for our intellect, but there's like the whole rest of the being, you know? And so when you're talking about yoga, that's one of the things I love, is because I always talk about being in our body and our spirit and everything, you know, the heart, mind, and gut alignment. Like, we have to like show up on all these different levels and learn how to clear the way. And as you're talking, I'm thinking about that old image of brain with a stick body.
I know.
That's how we're treated, though.
Yeah, I always say to people, we're not just brains on a stick. So I love that you brought up that imagery, because that's exactly what I use all the time. And I just want to say that, you know, it goes pretty deep, actually, for why that happens. I mean, we have to consider that we live in, you know, Western culture. And if we look at Greco-Roman traditions, there is this, you know, pattern of having these binaries, and one of them being the mind-body split. And the idea that the intellect, the brain, the mind, which has been gendered masculine in these cultures, right, really has more power, it has more authority, it garners more respect than the body, which has been gendered feminine. If we think about some of our very, you know, popular sayings, one that was always told to me was mind over matter, mind over matter, that we should override what we're feeling, that, you know, those sources of information, really, they can be considered suspect. They're not considered to be credible. They're not considered to be worthy. And that if we want to will something, we can force ourselves. We can force our bodies to work through pain. We can work through resistance if we just want it enough. And we really, you know, in that way are taught to, you know, segment ourselves and to only honor one way of knowing over others. And it's so indicative of that patriarchal tradition of, you know, femininity and the realm of emotions is not to be trusted. And if we go into religion, this is the source of evil. This is the source of sin. If we think about westward expansion, right, the idea of conquering the frontier, the idea of having nature really bend to our human will, we see it all over. And that is what I was really, I think, coming back to terms with, is how has this culture, the narrative, the value systems, you know, the structured oppression within that system, led me astray from my own authentic self, from my own inner wisdom, from my own inner guidance system. And by having the intellectual explain things and help me to ask critical questions, and then coming fully into my body and actually learning how to listen to what it needed and how to serve it, that is where I really felt the greatest sense of expansion, the greatest sense of empowerment. It was a reclaiming of my full self, which was, you know, so incredible and moving and beautiful, because, you know, I would go back and think to myself that I don't remember the last time that I felt even comfortable in my body, or the last time I felt that I had the permission to be powerful. I think that that really left me in girlhood. And statistically, it shows that, you know, girls up until about 8 to 9, 10 years old feel pretty great about themselves, and what they see as possibilities for their life is very expansive. And right in those prepubescent sort of tween years, there's a drastic drop in terms of what they see as being possible for themselves. And they really have a tendency to make themselves smaller. So my story, I always say, is not anything unique, to be quite honest. I'm very much the typical statistic that we've seen in terms of seeing that dip in self-esteem.
Right. And I know that I am. And I know that when I started stepping into leadership and waking up years ago, and I kept hitting what seemed to be like these walls, like I would ask all the questions and I'd begin to grow in my consciousness. And then it would be like all these invisible barriers, and it was kind of wild. And then it was hard to find other women who'd been doing it too, along with me. And it took a while to kind of get the groove going. And so I know there's still girls out there that are going through that hump still, you know, because we haven't awakened to the whole consciousness yet to stop this intergenerational transmission of gookiness, I call it. You know, I try not to give too many powerful words. So if when there's girls, younger girls around, and you help younger girls, and what would, if somebody's listening to us right now who's younger, or they have a daughter, what would you want to say to them to help them kind of get their daughter started, or if they were young themselves, get started to free themselves? Where would be a good starting spot? Maybe it's
as a parent?
As a parent to help their daughter, yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you asked that question, because I actually work primarily with women, young women to, you know, any age women, I will say, And yet I am a parent, and interestingly enough, I do not have a daughter. I always thought I would have a daughter, and then I knew that I was destined to have a son, which is exactly what I have. And so I'm speaking not as a parent of a daughter, nor am I speaking as someone who specifically works with young girls, but someone who has studied this and worked with others and coming from the place of being a young girl and feeling that I was limited in who I could be and how I was seen. And so I think one of the most powerful things that I like to offer is if we can see specifically girls and young people in general as their own people, right? I think one thing that's benefited me as a parent is I never really spoke to my child as a child and within this like hierarchical framework. The things that he said to me, his ideas, his comments, I very much, you know, held them with respect and openness. I treated him and do treat him as a full autonomous individual without blurring the lines of, you know, parenting, obviously. And I think that oftentimes girls are dismissed. I think girls are diminished. I think girls are only to be seen as someone who is cute, who is performing, who is pleasing. And so I really encourage all adults when they interact with girls, whether they're parents or not, to see the fullness of the individual in front of them. And if they have the tendency to comment on that child who happens to be a girl, is to think about what are other ways we can encourage these girls? How can we encourage them to also see themselves fully? Is the go-to compliment how cute or how pretty they are? Or is there something else that can be said? Because research also shows that when girls are asked what they like best about themselves, that they name a body part. And when boys are asked what they like best about themselves, they name a skill or a talent. So I really encourage people to, let's focus then on what are some of the skills, the talents, what is the fullness of this girl in front of us? Can she be more than simply her cute smile or her bright eyes? Can we allow herself to also see herself as more than that? Because the messages that we see, you know, in the dominant culture is so much about the objectification. There is such an emphasis on beauty and cuteness, and there's nothing inherently wrong with it. It just happens to be a very one-dimensional possibility. So can we see that girl in front of us as full and as whole and as complete and allow herself the opportunity to see herself that way as well?
Yes, it's good to have fluid viewing and being multifaceted, because none of us is one-dimensional, even though we do hear those kinds of answers and get those kinds of experiences. And I see a lot of people who are very sensitive and intuitive, right? And they get that kind of shunned too. And so one of the things I was thinking about when you were just talking about that is, like, I'm a very intuitive, sensitive. And when I was a young girl, everything was about my brain, how smart I was. And you know, you're, you know, six going on 60 because I was so smart, and I was really smart, but I also had all these other things going on. And I was also really intuitive, and that got really pushed down. You know, you can't trust it. You don't have that inner wisdom. It's not true. Be scientific method, you know, all of that. And then of course, Forbes came out not long ago with the quote that intuition is the highest form of intelligence. And so now I kind of laugh at, you know, many years later, like, well, okay, I was just doing my intelligent thing, but it still was one dimensional. It was still always one dimensional. And my brother, who's only 13 months younger than me, all of the skills and all of those things were always talked about. And I think it's just how the culture has manifested and brought it forward. So when you're working with women, because you work with women to help them become more and more empowered and to embody it. And I think that combination is really what makes you really unique and special and very much aware, like on an authentic level, because it's not just in our head. It's not just a good idea. You know, sometimes people say things, I'm like, no, it's not just a good idea. It's like a thing. It's a real experience to like unlock right here and allow all of us to be present in a situation, right? And so you have the honor to guide people so that they can be more fully in their life experience and actually have a rich expression of life and thus be more empowered. And so do you have a story maybe of somebody that you've worked with that, you know, without giving away the details of the person example, but like kind of the flow of some of the things that you have witnessed in the transformation of some of the women that you've had the pleasure of working with?
Yeah, and I think it speaks to what you just said about your experience as being a girl compared to the one that your brother had, where you were just only one part of you was being focused on, only one part of you was sort of being celebrated, where there were so many other aspects. And so as you were sharing that, I was thinking to myself that, you know, one of the key pieces of all of this is the integration of all of those seemingly disparate parts of ourselves, that if we can claim all of who we are, the fullness of who we are, and integrate it, then we really become whole. Then we're sitting in the center. So I was actually reflecting on a conversation I had with both of my clients this morning prior to our podcast. And each of them was sort of, you know, kind of sharing some version of, you know, that, you know, I was only seen as this number in the lineup of siblings. I was only seen as the athlete. I was only seen as the fill in the blank. And what about these other parts of me? Do they count? Where do they fit in? It also relates to where most of my clients, it's also think about the parts of themselves they don't maybe like, their shadow sides, or the earlier versions of themselves that they maybe have some shame about, right? And recognizing that if we're really going to come into the sense of empowerment, that empowerment is really plugged into the full radical acceptance of all parts of us. All the parts that currently exist, the shadow, the light, all of the versions that we've been, because I know, Diane, I'm sure you can look at your life, as can your listeners, think, wow, like, I remember that version of me, or I remember that girl, I remember that woman, right? You almost could like sit down with them and they're like a different person, right? And yet they're the versions of us that maybe we like better, that we're more proud of. And I say, to be really empowered, it means you hold all of it with love. You hold all of it with acceptance. You can really see it, and without giving it a judgment, without labeling good or bad, right or wrong, when we use that mindfulness and that presence of being, it's like, it is what it is. It was what it was. I am here. I can hold all of it. I can see it. I can make choices, but I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to deny it. I'm not going to shame it. I'm not going to put guilt on it. I'm not going to stuff it down and then sort of set myself up for being sick years later as I keep shoving these things down. Rather, I am just going to come fully into the center of the fullness, the wholeness of everything I am, everyone I've been, everyone I'm becoming, and allow it to just be. To be, and then make choices from there. So for me, it was really the short answer. And you know that obviously I have long answers to every question, and I own that. That is me. Is integration with love, integration with acceptance, allowing ourselves to be whole and therefore be empowered.
Yes, that the integration is so important. I had a client earlier this morning, and he loves to like learn things. Like, he's always into self, you know, learning this about himself, that about himself. And the one thing we were talking about is taking a breath and allowing himself to integrate the new awareness and the new understanding and the reclaiming of that part of his life, instead of like, let's go reclaim the next thing. Let's integrate it as we go, so that we can have a connection to all of it and not just little pieces at a time. So I think integration is huge, and it's something that takes effort and a guide and somebody helping show us the way. Like, we had people helping us show us the way too, because it's the road alone doesn't work. We're mammals. We're meant to be around other humans. And so you get to step into someone's life and be that guide, that person that's ahead of them on the path, that can help show them the way and ask the important questions and help them reflect and everything. So do you work with people all around? You do work with people virtually, right? So like, if somebody's listening to you right now and they're like, oh, I got to know Melanie, they could contact you, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I have clients from London to Sydney and Los Angeles, where I'm based, to all over the United States, Canada. So yes, I can work with people anywhere. And if I may, I wanted to go back to something that you said that is, I think, is really important, mm-hmm. in terms of, you were talking about working with your client and saying, you know, give it some time to integrate, like before you leap to the next thing. The other thing I want to offer listeners in terms of understanding the importance of embodying, which is being, right? So as opposed to just the doing, it's the being. Yeah. And can we listen, where the timing of it is not just a It's not like a prescription. It's not like this constant sort of unfolding equation where it's like, boom, boom, on to the next one. That when we can go into the rhythms of our body, we can also go into the rhythms of our process. And there are times to accelerate and there are times to pause. There are times to savor. There are times to take in and receive. And that's part of the beauty of really empowering people, as you know, in your work, is that it is not prescriptive, that this is very much tailored to the needs of the person, where they're starting, where they've been, where they want to go, and what happens in between, and what makes sense for their rhythms, what makes sense for the obstacles and challenges that are revealed, for the wins that are revealed. Mm-hmm. And the best way for anyone to continue that work long after they've completed their time with us is to teach them how to tune in. So yes, it's not about enabling or creating dependency as the guide, but it's sort of shepherding them into their own knowing and their own truth, so that as they're continuing that self-growth work, they can really reflect and like, you know, it's feeling like I need to have a bit of a rest. It's feeling like, oh, you know what? I can go ahead and expend a little bit more energy. And so when I'm thinking about even my clients today, a big word that came up was release and surrender. They have been doing so much work and, you know, really showing up and fully committed. I'm like, and they're like, okay, so what's the next thing? That was actually right. My client yesterday. So what's the next thing? I said, actually, you know what? I said, the next thing I'd really love to see rest between now and the end of, Thanksgiving week. And, you know, essentially take the next 10 days, right? Because people will be listening to this later. And take the time to really savor this, integrate, feel the wins, and kind of close loops with what you've done up until this point before you add something new. That this is not, you know, this massive sprint. And in a culture that is about competition and comparison and, you know, pushing past our boundaries so often, that in itself is a huge empowering reset for people, is to go, oh, okay, I can take the space to integrate and not feel guilty about it. Like, this is the work. There's something really beautiful and profound about that.
I think it is beautiful and profound, right? That ability to rest. We're living on a sine wave and it's okay. We're human beings, not human doings. You know, that's a really good point. I run into that all the time. And I even have some people who, I think probably borderline on being addicted to what the next thing is.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, and they have destination addiction and some other things. We could go into that for hours with the two of us, but the point being that maybe I'll have to do like a second episode. You never know.
I'm like, seriously, sister, I could talk to you forever. And I would love to do a second episode if you'd have my wordy self again.
Oh yeah, absolutely. In a heartbeat, because I think it's so important. But I have another couple questions. If you have a couple minutes, I know we're running late, but I wanted to ask you, or I want to kind of bring up the whole idea of women in leadership and business. I have interviewed several women from large companies and things like that, where they have, and some of them, they own the companies, you know, like all different kinds of women in business who are leaders in the business world and trying to affect change in corporate structures and in entrepreneur structures and in just in the business world in general. Mm-hmm. And you are one of those influencers and one of those leaders. And so is there something that you would like to say to women who want to be in leadership roles or who are, that would maybe give them a little bit of encouragement or boost to say, keep going, sister, instead of backing down? Like, because you are really good at that. And so what would you want to say to them?
Well, I would definitely say things have changed drastically. Mm-hmm. If we think about the last 40 years, if we think about the last 20, that there continues to be a shift, the needle keeps being moved. Mm-hmm. And so I think we can focus on what needs to be changed. And yet it's so important to always focus on what's working and what has shifted, not to confuse progress with equality, because sometimes that can come in. But like, yeah, let's celebrate that there has been the shift in, let's say, representation for women politically, or there are more, you know, female owned companies, there are more, you know, Fortune 500 CEOs that are women. Let's focus on that. And let's also look at how, as a whole, in terms of representation and storylines and narratives, we have been the ones who have made that change. It was not just handed to us. Our efforts to come together, in community and in solidarity and on the grassroots level, we have affected that change. And so we can take the conversations that we're seeing where, you know, there are definitely more conscious conversations that are happening. There are more conscious conversations that are even happening in the corporate world, although sometimes people might be surprised to hear that. There is that is evidence of our work, our commitment. It is evidence that there is a need and a real hunger for something new and to continue to reimagine and recreate that it is the right time, right? That you are in the right place and that we have come so far and that we can continue if we come together, right? Mm-hmm. As a collective,
right.
That we really, really, really can continue to push this into a direction where there's more equity, there's mm-hmm. more opportunity, and there's more value for everyone of every walk of life and every background. I think that is the most helpful thing that I can say is look at what's already happened. See wow. that as evidence.
Yes. And then that's the evidence to keep going and yes. keep knowing that there's always more and we're always expanding. And so we're, you know, it's just always this beautiful process. And when you look back and you see how much things have changed, there's definitely hope for the future.
And, absolutely.
And we can have fun along the way because you and I love to have fun.
Yes. And yes, exactly.
It doesn't all have to be arduous, hard, oh my God, heaviness. It can also have that balance of rest and play and joy and understanding that being a visionary and doing all these amazing things also comes with it levity and laughter and fun and happiness. So what's the well-rounded as we wrap our arms around all of us, all the different versions of us, we get to be happier.
Absolutely. And I think that saying, I mean, Emma Goldman is always quoted saying, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution. Whether or not she actually said those words precisely is questionable. And yet the sort of sentiment was, this is our life right now. It's not, you know, when you fill in the blank or when this happens, it's right now. And that's that presence. And so let's work for change. Let's work for improvement. Let's look for, you know, better fill in the blank and yet love and have gratitude and enjoy what is happening right now as well. That is actually part of the way that we impact that change is to have that element of celebration and joyful connection right now.
Oh, perfect. So if you're really loving what Melanie is saying half as much as I am and you want to reach out to her, all of her contact information is in the show notes. And I suggest you do it. Follow her on Instagram and Facebook and reach out to her if you want to work with her or you have any questions for her, because Melanie is a really amazing person in person and also on this podcast. So Melanie, is there anything that you wanted to talk about today that I didn't cover or that's a burning desire on your heart that you would like to share?
No, I think we got into a lot of stuff. I'm looking forward to the possibility of a round two and just want to extend my gratitude to you, Diane, for all of the incredible work that you do, what you offer your listeners and your clients, and want to express my deep, deep gratitude for everyone who's tuning in. We all affect change in our own way, and all of it is incredibly worthy and important. So thank you for everybody who shows up every single day the way that you do. I appreciate all you do and all you are.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I have those sentiments as well. So I have one final question that I love to ask before we say adieu. And I would like to have you come back for a round two. And what I want to focus that on is critical consciousness.
Woo, I love it.
And that's something that's really dear to my heart. And I don't often get to get that deep in these conversations because people don't really want to hear podcasts longer than an hour or so, and it could go on longer. So because we've had this first episode, I would like to do a round two and focus starting on critical consciousness and moving forward from there. And people can listen to this as kind of the beginning. If you're willing to do that, I would love to do that.
I'm down. I'm totally down.
All right, perfect. And so here's your last question for the day. If you had a billboard that you could put anything on that the whole world would see, what would it say?
Wake up.
Wake up. That is a perfect one. Wake up, everybody. Mm-hmm. All right. You heard it from Melanie Klein, an amazing, empowered woman who's really affecting change in the world. Please contact her, follow her, and make sure that she knows from you how she has touched your life. So remember, everybody, to keep your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you. You're a rock star and you're here on purpose with a purpose. So go out there and live, live, live. And know that until the next episode of the Someone Gets Me podcast, I wish you well.
Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit someonegetsme.com. Again, thanks for listening.